Welcome to The Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that we admire that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifestor that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. Today's guest, Donna James, is one of the most inspiring nutritionists, and I would say women, that I know today. She's developed her completely own nutritional archetype system, which a lot of you probably recognized and tuned into on our supported episode. The link is below, and that is loaded with massive information, depending on which archetype you are. And before that, she actually started out in finance, in a career she thought she was supposed to do that would be safe. And then she quickly realized that her heart really was somewhere else. And she had to make that complete leap out of the safety world, getting reeducated again, really taking herself through and reinventing herself to create the incredibly successful practice she has today. And now she's an author. I think you will really resonate with this episode if you yourself, you're on a journey that may not be bringing your soul tons of happiness, and you know that there's something out there that you are longing to do, that you are here to do, but haven't quite gotten the clarity on, or maybe you do have the clarity, but you don't quite know how to make that leap of faith. I think that she's going to serve as a massive expander for you. You'll also resonate as well if you are into wellness, health, and nutrition. Also, if you've been down that whole journey of love that can be so tricky and it can be so windy, but she is a fantastic expander for that as well, having just recently found the love of her life. So, without further ado, go ahead and kick back and see how Donna James came from the beaches of Australia into a very powerful woman in finance, now into an incredibly powerful nutritionist who also really values the importance of psychology, as well as energetics and just all around functional, holistic approach to your body. So we're here today with Donna James, who is an incredible nutritionist that actually really sees the world of nutrition very similar to I, through psychology, through functional medicine, as well as nutrition.
Yes.
So you incorporate very much the emotional, the mental, the physical, and so much more. I mean, we'll get into it all.
Maybe the etheric. Well,
yes, I love that. And so today we're going to kind of go through your kind of how you got where you are now to help expand others who may find it troubling to become, you know, follow their dream and really become what they set out to do. Because I know that you've had a career shift. I mean, you've been through so much that there's a lot to dig into. So first we'll start with
how did you come to practice what you do today, which is such a different approach, which, you've kind of answered this and supported, but mm-hmm. let's start with how did you become a nutritionist? Because I know you had a path before this.
So I was in finance before I moved into nutrition. And while I very much enjoyed working in finance, and then it was the 90s and early 2000s, it's very different to how it is today. It was fun. It was work hard, party hard. And then not working you as hard as what you do today. But there was always a calling within me to do something different. And I didn't fully know what that was. When I was 26 and it was after September the 11th and the market had crashed, and I decided to take 9 months off and just travel the world. And I went traveling the world. I was looking for answers. And I will say I didn't find an answer.
Awesome. That's so
because most of us think, well, like, on that trip, we're going to find the answer. And the truth was I didn't. And I arrived in London and naturally fell back into finance because that was the background that I came from, but knew that I wanted to do something different. And I, at that time, Dr. Perricone had come out with his books on inflammation and food, and I was absolutely fascinated with that and had always been interested in food because I struggled with my own body image and weight from the age of 12, and decided that that was something that I was interested in because I had read so much about it. And I actually had this hubris as well mm-hmm. of I know so much about it, like this is going to be easy for me. Boy, was I in for a shock. When I actually started to study, I was like, holy hell. Like, I know so much about diet programs, and I knew everybody's cell job, but I didn't know anything about the physical body. Mm. And so what I was taught was really functional medicine. So how was the biochemistry and how does food and nutrients operate within the body? And that was my training, as well as on the mind side of things. So I trained in the UK under a nutritional therapy program. That's what it was called. It was a 4-year program, and you came out with a background in nutrition, functional medicine, and therapy. And not recognized here in the US, mm-hmm. But certainly there in the UK. And I didn't realize how powerful it was until I really got into my practice here in the US. Mm-hmm. But one thing I noticed when I was in the UK is my internship was at the Brain Bio Clinic, and that was a mental outpatient facility for people with mental health issues. And at that point, I really started to recognize the power of food in changing the physical body and the mind. And so I was linked in that this is where I was going with all of this. And when I got into my practice, I was really working a lot on that biochemical side. So even though I was a nutritional therapist and I had some training in the therapy, it wasn't as fully developed as what the nutrition and the functional medicine piece was. And I got to a point, and only 6 months into my nutrition practice, and I couldn't answer some questions because not everything happens on the physical biochemical side. There's a lot of the influence of the mind on the physical body. And then I started to really expand that. Now my archetype, which we've spoken a little bit on the supporter series, is a Wonder Woman. And the Wonder Woman gets her sense of self-worth from success and achievement. And so that works really well for my clients, because guess what? I want to solve it all for them. I want results. You're coming to me and I'm going to get you results. Yeah. And so whatever I didn't know, I started researching. And from a spectrum of things, to the point that today I work on many different facets because I've become interested in the mind aspect and the etheric aspect, as well as my training in the biochemical piece. And so I will say, if this is something that you want to bring into fruition, be completely passionate about it. I mean, completely passionate. Like, you have to want to be the scientist behind this, and people need to feel all of that. Mm-hmm. So when I started my practice, I was still in finance, and I worked in finance for many years while I was building up my practice, so that never at any point was there some piece where I said to a client, you should come in to see me because I needed the financial support.
Beautiful.
I was always financially supported by my other work, and working ridiculously long hours so I could carry the two until I got to the point where I was like, I cannot do both together, and drop the finance.
You had a bridge.
Yeah. Yes. And people forget that, because sometimes there's this, just jump into it. Totally. And I'm saying, no, don't jump into it. Yep. That will cause other stresses for you. Once I dropped the finance, I then had so much more time to be able to dedicate to my practice in other areas. My income tripled.
See, I knew. Just like, became magnetic by doing it. And you're in your passion, finally.
Yes.
Like, fully blown in your passion.
Yes.
And can you talk about, and then I'm going to go way back to childhood and stuff, but can you talk about starting to, from the moment you got the light bulb that nutrition was the thing, mm-hmm. into actually pursuing and then going into practice? Can I hear about your fears and your any low self-worth and why it couldn't work out, or any of that you might have actually had along the way?
Oh, that's interesting. So I never doubted that I would have my own practice. There was never consideration that I wouldn't have it. So there weren't too many fears on that.
Great.
There was just such a calling that there was nothing negative behind that. I know that when I was toggling between the two jobs, obviously I had this great fear that I wasn't going to be able to financially support myself mm-hmm. because I'm relying on clients to come in. I was also at that time living in New York. I was on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything was about me providing the finances. And with my own childhood, there's a wound there.
Mm-hmm.
So when my parents separated when I was 11, I saw my mother's self-worth just disintegrate because she had to rely on my father for finances and my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
She was at her four kids,
mm-hmm.
and that was a struggle for her. And I swore I would never be dependent on anybody else for money.
Absolutely.
So that then created my archetype of the Wonder Woman. I was going to be successful so that I could be financially successful and not have to go through what I saw my mother go through.
And I think anybody who follows this work can relate to that, because it's that root block that made you go. But it's also what propelled you as well, which is so exciting.
Yes. And then what happens is that when you get to a certain level of success too, it also becomes a block.
Mm.
Because there's a certain level of income that you're maintaining, and then you're scared to let go of things.
Wow.
And this is a piece that I'm working through as I transition from a core-based practice in New York to being out here more in LA.
I love it.
Working through that.
It's my favorite when people are doing that. I just realized, because you're sitting in the light now, that you have, what is it called? The blue eye and the green eye.
Oh, I didn't know that there was a name for it. But yes, yeah. I just call it David Bowie eyes.
Oh, what? Did he have those?
Yes, and we have the same birth date.
Wow, and you're both beautiful. Yeah, every Capricorn I know is beautiful. But I just realized it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to
thank
it.
You.
Well, going back to childhood, mm-hmm. give us a little bit about where you grew up in. Was it really abundant? Was it in lack? And then big city, small town.
Mm, okay. I grew up in a little beachside town, and it was a very affluent town, so everybody had their holiday homes there. Very geographically, exquisitely beautiful. You know, everything was architecturally designed and so forth. And everybody was also beautiful. So everything was in this lusciousness.
Wow.
and I had this no
like
idea.
Miami or something.
I can't describe it like that, because there was more wholesomeness to it. So sometimes I say it's like this cooler version of Santa Barbara, because it was young too. But it had that beauty of Santa Barbara. Mm. So that was the environment that I grew up in. And for me, I never felt like the pretty girl. So because I just, you know, truth was, I wasn't as pretty as some of these other girls around me. But I took it to be more than what it was.
Mm.
So, you know, I started dieting when I was 12 and learning all about makeup. And I consumed tons of those books and diet books and so forth. And because I wanted to feel pretty. Now, luckily for me, my wound didn't go that way.
Mm.
So I moved it into really focusing on success and achievement. So I was also reading feminist books like The Beauty Myth and things like that.
Mm-hmm,
and at that time, like really, it was 1988 and I was 12. And so it was like, so independent woman, like mm-hmm. be successful.
Mm-hmm. That was
and then with the financial wound behind that as well, like that was driving me towards being the best. And so by the time I was 14, I was a straight A student, and I just moved through that all throughout my school life. And then when I studied, I did a double degree in finance and economics, and I graduated in the top 1%. You know, this would go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And in my nutrition piece, I'm trained as a nutritional therapist. I'm trained in functional medicine. I have my master's in medical nutrition. And then I have all these other facets, which to the point that I'm embarrassed about how much education is behind me, because it's because it came from a place of lack.
Totally. Yeah.
Of not good I'm enough. Not good enough. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like the more education I had, then I couldn't be wrong, because mm-hmm. the thought of being wrong for me was so devastating. And if you have that imprint, it's a big block.
I'm yet to meet somebody who doesn't. There's a very few, in fact. Actually, I do know a couple, but it's what most of us are operating on.
And so there's a childhood imprint there that when I was experienced, I should say, was when I was 8, I was reading in front of the class and I had an accent. So I was born in New Zealand and we moved to Australia when I was 6. And I couldn't pronounce the difference between bell and bull. And my teacher just hammered and hammered on me. And I couldn't say it. Mm-hmm. And I felt absolutely humiliated. And it must have been devastating, because the kids afterwards came up to me and were really there to try and support me. I do not know whether I said anything to my mother or not. But what did happen is it shut me down.
Totally.
I never wanted to read in front of the class. The thought of doing anything like that was so anxiety provoking, an extraordinary amount of fear and anxiety. But I had to do it too. So you couldn't graduate without that. But then this became more prominent when I was in my 30s and really starting my nutrition practice in New York, and I got TV straight away. And I'm, you know, I was working my finance job, and I would go from finance and I would go to the studio and be on TV, and I hated it.
Mm.
I was so anxious. Mm-hmm. I would be like 48 hours of nerve-wracking anxiety for like a 3-minute segment, and I was just like, I just don't know if I can do it. And I'd try and get out of it every week.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
And that's one of my biggest regrets today. Mm-hmm. Is that I just didn't have that self-confidence to know that it was okay to get it wrong. And I didn't embrace it. In fact, I just like moved away from it. Mm-hmm. And here I am at 43, and I'm like, wow, like I really wish that I did that. And mm-hmm. and it's something for me now to say, well, now I am going to do it.
And for you, how did you integrate it? How are you comfortable today doing this? What was sort of the way
I had to break that belief that being saying a word wrong was a devalue to me,
mm-hmm.
because I truly that it believed you. That or that it defined me.
Mm-hmm.
I that is really what I thought, mm-hmm. and I had to go back and recognize that that was the memory that was causing it, because you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not as though those memories come out and say, here is the, mm-hmm. this is what's going on.
It's all subconscious.
Yes. All completely subconscious.
Yeah.
And then I reinterpreted it. So I just
like
believed,
you suggest in the book.
Correct. So it's recognize the memory, reinterpret it, and energetically release it.
Mm-hmm.
So I reinterpreted that my teacher wasn't this wicked witch who was totally out there to humiliate me. And I decided that she saw my greatness and my ability to be successful. And that's why she wanted me to be able to pronounce it correctly.
I love it.
Now, I will never know whether that's true or not. But
who cares?
The thing is, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
right? Totally. It doesn't matter. I no longer hold that grudge against her, and I cracked it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know whether I energetically released it or not. I may have done some tapping on it or something like mm-hmm. that, but certainly a lot of breath. But for me, that reinterpretation was enough to be able to shift it.
Amazing.
And I knew this was the case when I was doing something, a video series for My Body Green and a live series, and I said something incorrect. I said mm-hmm. maybe coriander seed was something different, and my Indian friend afterwards was like, oh, you didn't get that right. And the normal me would have been, oh my goodness, they
shut
need
down.
To pull that
yeah.
video down
yeah, yeah, yeah,
I need
yeah.
to pull it down. And then I was like, oh well, you know. I was like, oh,
I can always tell when clients of mine who are in the industry have integrated finally their shadow and reprogrammed things like that, because I'll have some clients that are actors that are like, I did this interview and this thing happened. They have to pull everything. Oh my God, I'm spinning out. I'm like, oh no. Girl, you need to go. But when you're at the point of that, you've integrated.
Yes.
It's amazing. That's right. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Now going back to, that time I spent my life on the floor crying. What was that for you?
So
the lowest of lows.
I've never been on the floor crying.
Oh my God, you're amazing.
Well, that's my Wonder Woman
archetype. It's your Wonder Woman.
And so the Wonder Woman archetype will disconnect from her emotions. Mm-hmm. So she's learned from a very young age that if she feels into those emotions and fully expresses them, then she may end up on the floor.
Totally.
And being stuck in inertia, not being able to do anything.
Are the worst vulnerable.
So, yes. So I haven't been in that place. But I've been on the flip of that, mm-hmm. which is if you don't express your emotions or your feelings, how can you have these fully deep, connected, intimate relationships
Absolutely.
With people? So it becomes a real block in your intimate relationships and then in relationships with other people.
And yourself, yeah.
And yourself. But for me... It was more in my intimate relationships. That's where the trouble came mm-hmm. about, because I couldn't see how much I had disconnected myself from my feelings. Mm-hmm. And the thought of expressing my feelings was like a weakness,
mm-hmm.
even if it was love.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to put me in a vulnerable place.
Totally the worst.
And I can only say this because I can look back mm-hmm. and look at my flaws from my relationships. And one of the downsides to the Wonder Woman, despite her ending up on the floor crying, is this issue in her relationships. And I work with a lot of Wonder Woman, really successful, fun, great, beautiful woman, and they don't have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking around and going,
well, hard to get pregnant
because like I've done everything that I was supposed to do. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because there's this softness isn't there, the vulnerability isn't there, not knowing how to talk from a heart perspective. And I will say it's my current partner who really taught me that,
mm-hmm.
who really made me see that I wasn't doing that.
Amazing. Oh, good. Like the perfect medicine. We're so glad you came around. Everyone plays the fool in love that time that you lost all self-respect. I guess it sounds like you don't put yourself in that vulnerable of positions, but what would be your version of this?
My first love. Mm-hmm. So my first love I had from the age of 18 to 20, and it was my university boyfriend, and he had broken up with me after 3 years, and I was away. I was at home, and it was just 2 hours away from where I was living. And I had this feeling that there was some other woman coming in, and there was. So when he had broken up with me, I remember getting in my car and like driving past his place.
Oh, totally.
Like,
I've been there.
And there was one time I was like, I'm sure they're on the balcony.
Yeah,
like correct. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Who are you? Get back in the car and go home.
Your Wonder Woman was like, we're not taking this
shit. No, I'm not being this stalker.
Awesome. Oh, I've been
That's
there.
It. And that was it. I haven't gone there again.
There was this one boyfriend that broke my heart, and I would drive, like, therapeutically drive by his house. Not, like, to stop. I mean, I did in the beginning, for sure. Yeah. But there's still times, I think, like, a couple of years ago that I did it. Just like, wow, I've really grown so much mm-hmm. from that experience. So I'm sure there's not a woman listening that hasn't done.
I'd say if my current boyfriend broke up with me, I'd probably do that. I'd be like, where are you?
What did you learn from that version of yourself?
Well, you know, it was a moment in time, and I don't know actually, but I'd be curious if that sort of crazy aspect was so foreign to me that I never wanted her to be seen again, mm-hmm. that I just put her in her mm-hmm. her box.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the process of learning to shut down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What would you say to her now?
I would say that it's that the only way that you can have a truly heart-connecting, deep, soulful, wonderful, sexy, fulfilling relationship is you have to be able to express your feelings and share them. And it's not this, right, where there's this complete emotional catharticism, yeah, yeah. Like there's a range here, which is what I took it to be, there's here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there can be anger, but it's not rage, mm-hmm. right? So it's finding the balance there mm-hmm. of being able to express, but without it being a regurgitation of emotional vomit.
Which is like the Wonder Woman's biggest fear.
Biggest fear. That I'm going to be the crazy psycho bitch.
I can resonate with all of this. What is your biggest shadow aspect that you've had to integrate, which it sounds like we might be touching on?
Yes, it would be the visibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like I'm still working on that piece of fully enabling myself to be seen and in all facets.
Mm-hmm.
And that means being wrong and not being perfect. And a lot of us who've done some work will say we're not at that place. We don't believe we need to be perfect, but there's a piece of us that really still wants to be.
And what we've been programmed to, yes, be, to be loved. Yes.
So it's that. Mm. I think I'm still working on that.
Beautiful. Mm. Biggest mistake you've made in your business?
Great question. Being too independent.
Mm.
So I didn't work for anybody else. Mm-hmm. So I moved to New York and I established my practice on my own. I didn't work with a mentor, and I wish that I did.
Mm.
And it was probably about 5 years into my practice that I met Dr. Frank Lipman, who's a functional medicine physician. Gabrielle Bernstein actually said to me, you should meet Dr. Frank Lipman and you maybe go and work in his practice. And I was the typical thing about, I couldn't possibly reach out to Dr. Franklin and ask if I could work with him. And I didn't know it was low self-worth.
Yeah.
And that's a really good piece for people to recognize.
Yeah, it's when you're too afraid to reach out to your expander is what I call it.
Yeah, I wish that I did that, because when I did meet him, by then I was well and truly established in my practice. And I wish I had that mentorship.
Mm. And that's what I recommend anybody who is pivoting into a career for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it will go so much faster.
Much, much faster.
Biggest inner child shift you needed to make?
Well, I think there's a number of them, which we were touching on before. So it was the being scared of being visible, being able to feel into my emotions, and the financial aspect. And, you know, all of those really took some time. I would say that my last boyfriend was the final piece on the financial aspect, because I was supporting our relationship financially, and I had a lot of questions over the relationship, and one of them was about finances. And I wondered whether I didn't want to be in that relationship because I was the primary financial contributor to the relationship. I stayed in that relationship to figure that piece out.
Mm.
That required me talking to my mother to resolve some of those things.
What did that look like without me too?
And, you know, so it's interestingly, because once you let those things go, you completely forget.
Totally.
And so I actually cannot remember the conversation.
That's integration.
And yes, like I just can't remember the conversation, other than it gave me permission to actually leave that relationship and to say that I didn't need to financially support somebody to prove something.
I love that. Oh, I hope so many people are, and the flip side's equally as, I don't need to be financially supported to stay in a relationship.
Yes, you know? That's exactly right.
So important. The most humbling thing you've ever experienced?
My divorce.
Mm. And what was it about it?
I was 31 at the time, and wow, this is quite emotional for me.
Good. This is where you guys will expand the most.
I was like, wow. Yeah. Okay, I still got some work to do here. Wow. So I was married for about 6 years, and my husband and I were living in London, and I realized that their relationship wasn't working, and my my ex-husband was bipolar and was, you know, doing a lot of drugs and suffering from severe bouts of depression. And I, in that relationship, I didn't communicate well with him. I didn't share what was actually going on. And for, I stopped counting after 9 months when he didn't ask me how my day was.
Oh.
And so I felt just completely emotionally neglected, although loved by my husband, but just neglected. And rather than me saying, can you ask me how my day is? Or even me sharing it, even me just saying, I'm going to tell you about my day. I retreated inwards and started to move further and further away from that relationship. So we were just like moving like this. And then I just had, my mother came to see us and she was, couldn't believe the state that their relationship had gotten into. And it wasn't, there was no fighting or anything, but it was just this distance. And because of the lack of communication between the two of us, we separated and moved apart. And I flew to New York as like a runaway, and he moved to Dubai. And going to Dubai was, he went through rehab and then moved to Dubai, and that was the best thing for him, because he then had to go into a forced detox with drugs, because since they're completely, you're going to throw in a jail.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Where are you going to find them? Yeah.
And there was always I carried an extraordinary amount of guilt for leaving and not staying through in that relationship to work through it. That guilt permeated every other relationship that I went into post that, until I went to a Marianne Williamson lecture and she said, who do you need to forgive? And I realized it was myself. And then I realized that if I needed to forgive myself, I probably needed to reach out to my ex-husband to say that too. And we were not on talking terms. And I did. And, which was a wonderful experience for us to be able to then to reconnect and go through that. And he agreed that it wasn't just me, and it was, you know, there was two of us in there, and it was a long time ago, and that I need to let go of that.
How beautiful.
That I was carrying.
Oh, so healing that he was open to.
Yes. Really. I mean, initially, it wasn't like, my life is great.
Yeah. I'm killing it in Dubai. Yeah. Got all those girlfriends.
I married kids, which I knew, and I'm like, my life is great. And then I get the real stuff, which is like, oh, okay, maybe it's not so great.
It's that Buddhism. The pain is what connects us. You know, so that's really beautiful. And thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that. Today, I'd like to tell my lowest self. What would that be for you?
That in that stage you are being your lower self, that to move up to the higher self and really trust within the heart here, that's where the answers lie. Hey, the real depth lies here, and to not to be concerned with that. There's one other thing, is judgment. And I had judgment against other people. One was my mother. And when I was probably, when my parents had separated, I saw my mother crack down emotionally. She sat on the stairs and she just cried. And she's a super tough Wonder Woman. Like, those emotions don't come out. And I was with my brothers and sisters and we saw her going through this. And rather than have compassion for her, we were like, oh my goodness, we never want to be like that. And so that stoicism was even more imprinted, because here we were seeing this woman who was struggling to raise four kids and crack because she had given us this very strong belief of be strong, be the strong, independent woman, and you won't need to express these emotions. So seeing her go through that was really tough. And my mother and I have spoken about that, and my mother and I have a really wonderful relationship today, because we didn't. I would say anybody that has some slightly precarious relationship with their parents, it really is worthwhile taking the time to talk to them, which can be the most scariest thing in the world, but it is absolutely healing. And if you are having problems with your physical body or in your relationships, or not being able to bring things into fruition, then some of that root is highly likely to be with the childhood wounds.
1,000%. There's this great book, you may know the author, Trauma, It Didn't Start With You, about epigenetics and trauma.
Absolutely love it. It is fantastic. Isn't it amazing?
interesting. And he talks about his eye issues, and he goes and sees like the guru, all the gurus in the East, and he gets so angry after waiting in line to see like the most, you know, praised guru. And he says, basically, you need to fix your relationship with your
parents. Yeah.
and he said it started to heal after he did. But it's so true. Yeah. It really is. And if you're not in a position where that's possible, then doing the more subconscious inner work of what you can to change that story. But it is
Can rewrite it as well, because sometimes it's too upsetting for you to be able to change that story.
Absolutely.
So I worked with a wonderful psychotherapist and EFT coach, mm-hmm. and she had me rewrite part of my story.
Mm, beautiful.
And just to bring in this greater strength of grace.
I love that.
So there's all pieces. Like you can rewrite things, mm-hmm. or you can reinterpret, or you can bring other support in just to make you feel more resilient.
The most important is that it unlocks and you clear it.
Yes, that's what it's all about.
That's all that matters. Like that's where the magic will happen. The limiting belief I picked up that I'm still working through today.
I think it's the visibility piece. Mm-hmm. It's still a challenge for me. Culturally too in Australia, it's like tall poppy syndrome, so you don't want to be talking about yourself. That I'm challenged to do. I much prefer people to ask me questions than for me to be, oh, this is all about me. So I'm aware of that one, and I'm still working through that.
Beautiful. And every woman on the planet. Well, I mean, a lot of women, I feel like they have that issue. The nurturers in the book.
The nurturers definitely have that. It's hard for them to take up space, which is interesting because they're the ones with more of the weight issues.
I know.
So they're physically taking up space to try and match this sort of smallness here that they're feeling.
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely so true energetically. Or for the ones that are creating safety through the body.
Completely.
Taking up more space.
Yes.
Yeah, for boundaries and all of that.
Exactly.
The most kismet thing I've manifested. What would that be?
Two things. Mm-hmm. So one would really be my current partner, who is just here, like my I use those new age terms, like my twin flame soulmate. Wow. like truly that balance to me, and I'd been looking for him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And when I met you, I was in my previous relationship and was never certain of that relationship, mm-hmm. and left that, and you and I just had a conversation, and you said, I want you to write down everything that you're looking for in a partner. And I roll my eyes and go, Lacey, like, I've done this for you.
Yeah,
this is the stuff that got me into trouble, totally. Right? This is why I ended up with this partner and this partner. And I know you've referenced this yourself, that we need to be really conscious of what we write down. And I had looked back at some notes like you had and looked at what I'd written, and I was like, well, no wonder you ended up with this partner, because it was so fixated on the external and the physical,
not the core.
And when I wrote this list down, and I just put it into my notes, and every time I thought of something, I jotted it down. So the things that were really important to me went down on a number of occasions, and I had this 100 list, mm-hmm. like a 100-point list of things I was looking for. The very first thing on there was, makes my heart expand.
Mm, beautiful.
And when I look back, there were very few things on there that were about the external. It was always about the feeling thing. So that we were completely, sexually attracted to each other. There's passion, there's laughter, there's a compatibility, there's an ease with communication, like
so
a
your
deep
soul
intimate
needs,
all of that. They were all the things that I wrote down, and that is what I got.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations.
And the one thing that wasn't on my list that he didn't have was actually a proxy for something else.
Could you give us an example of the past?
It was that I wanted him to own his own house. You are, the external again.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was just a proxy for financial stability.
Totally.
And so he doesn't own his own house, but he's financially stable.
That's why it's like you always have to get down to the core of what are we... Amanda's actually
really
the cutest one, which we both know because she's your former assistant, but she was always manifesting, a British guy with red hair, which is... that's so unique. I mean, that's amazing. But she finally realized when she did the work to get down to the core, she had programmed that meant funny. She had associated like great sense of humor. And she ended up manifesting that.
That's about to say,
totally.
Yes.
But, you know, that's what the core heart, like soul was, is actually yes. wanting. So that's awesome.
So, and with that, and I will say that because I had sort of done that work, I was so reluctant to do it. And I was actually in a place where I felt really disheartened. I felt like I'd done the work on myself. I really liked who I was. I had many wonderful things happening in my life. Where was my partner? Mm-hmm. And I really was, I got to, it was a, like a low point. I remember July, this was July last year, mm-hmm. that I was like, I just don't believe it. I mm-hmm. don't know if it's ever going to happen. I work with a wonderful Russian physicist who works on the energetics and psychological profiling on the
And
energetics.
He does neurofeedback, right?
He does.
Yeah.
And the White House actually works with his work to be able to identify psychological types.
Oh,
and I've worked with him for many years, and he gave me a really beautiful, a jeweled elephant mm-hmm. and a little like bio something, and I don't fully understand his work. And he said, I just want you to start to put into that like everything that you want. And so every day that I was in my office, I was putting in what I wanted from a relationship. Wow. And I really started to feel into it again. And you had asked me, I want you to start to see relationships out there that
yeah,
you want. And I, the expanders, and I was like, oh my goodness, like I hardly know any. And mm-hmm. that was my block,
mm-hmm.
is that I just didn't believe it was possible.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And so many of us are actually told, no, you can't have this. This is just a fallacy. It's made up. It's just all Hollywood BS.
Or like biblical, you don't deserve it. That's greed.
Whatever, yeah, like whatever something like that. Yeah. Except 50% and you should be happy.
Yeah.
And intuitively, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case. I truly got the most wonderful man who is matched to me on all of those levels, on a chemistry compatibility and ability to be able to communicate, like on those three major levels.
Amazing. And did you end up finding expanders? Because that'll help expand other people.
I did. So the couple that I used was John Legend and Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, great. They're so like from an outside perspective.
Right?
Yeah, they look amazing.
They're fun. And just like, that was one of them.
And she's so open about fertility. I mean, they're so cool on so many levels.
And then I kept seeing other ones, but that was the couple that I was like really sort of pegged towards.
And then your guy's Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then, so that's my big one. And then
that.
There are other little ones that come across. And one of them was when I was really in the midst of the beginning stages of my manifesting. And I believed that I could manifest anything in the world. And it was January in New York. And it was the first time we had the horrible, horrible snowstorms.
Totally.
And I'm like, I'm so sick of this. Like, I what do I want to be in the world? And I'm like, I want to be in Malibu. Never having been to Malibu.
I love it.
That's where I want to be. And so I go, well, how can I make this happen? Right? And sometimes we forget to ask that question.
Yeah.
And that sort of manifests. I was like, oh, how can I make this happen? And I realized that the only way I could do it was actually through my ex-boyfriend, not the one we've spoken about. And so we'd broken up like 2 or 3 days before, and I was like, hey, you know, 2 year on and off relationship, now I'm done. Because I realized in that I was a Wonder Woman, he wanted a femme fatale.
Mm.
So 2 years of back and forth, only for me to realize that I was not the match for him, and he
totally.
Was never going to be able to see me for who I was. So my self-worth is like, I'm out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I contacted him and say, would you like to get a house in Malibu for a couple of months, and I'll house sit it?
Wait, this is amazing. That's awesome.
And he goes, let me think about it. Wow. Okay, why don't you go and look for a place in Malibu? And so
this is awesome.
And I got my beachfront property in Malibu.
Wow.
That I started to write the book
awesome.
For the archetypes.
Amazing.
On that there. So that was when I started to do it.
That was your place to channel.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. You figured out a will. You expanded into it. Yeah, through your relationship.
And so had I not had that experience in Malibu, I wouldn't be in LA today.
Wow. So it's what gave you the licensing that you could, you could do both.
I had the experience that I could actually, I had the experience of being in Malibu, me for like testing the waters to see if I wanted to be in LA. And now LA is really where I want to be.
It's where your heart's at right now, because you're in love.
Yes.
Okay, let's get into the book now, because I know there's so much we covered and supported that people are going to benefit from immensely, but I want to give a little bit of an overview for anybody who's just tuning in now.
Mm-hmm.
So give us the archetypes in a nutshell, going into nutrition and what basically what each archetype essentially covers.
Yes. So There are four archetypes. We'll start with the first one, which is the Wonder Woman. And the Wonder Woman bases her self-worth on success and achievement. And, bases her self-worth on success and achievement. The Nurturer bases her self-worth on giving to others and always being there and being very compassionate and kind. The Femme Fatale, it's about the physical body. So her self-worth is based on the way that she looks. The Ethereal, the self-worth tends to be based on her intuition and being different. Now, they all have really wonderful attributes, but there's the shadow piece too. So if you're the Wonder Woman and it's the pursuit of success, then out of balance, you're just driven, and you start to turn off those emotions like what I was explaining before. So you can move into, you disconnect from the feminine and the feeling and the lovely, lush, essential side of things and in the masculine. The hormones that come into place are cortisol. That's her dominant hormone. So she tends to then store body fat around the abdominal area here because that's what cortisol dictates. Now, to change that, if she doesn't want body fat here, then she needs to eat and live in a way where the cortisol levels are not as upregulated or not flatlining because she's so exhausted. And so I go into that in the book. So each archetype has a different way of eating. For her in particular, she needs to remove the food sensitivities, and the two most common ones, as most of us know, are dairy and gluten. Mm-hmm. So if she's struggling with some health issues, she should start there because it's highly likely that that is part of the issue for her. Those food sensitivities exacerbate the cortisol, so that just makes it worse for her. Mm-hmm. I go into it in a lot more detail because it's all in the subtleties between the archetypes that you start to see that success. Mm. So it is.
So it's really tuning into that.
Very, very, very. Mm. It's very refined. And then, so the nurturer, because she's always giving to others and tends to put other people first before herself, is like give, into the point of exhaustion. Then that shifts the way that she eats. So she tends to be a little bit more of a comfort eater, a secret eater. The Wonder Woman's a reward eater. I forgot to mention that piece. So there's there's a behavioral eating pattern. She's a reward eater. She's the one that at the end of the day needs to have that dark chocolate or the glass of wine because it's her permission to switch off. Mm. So pulling that out for her can be really challenging until she reprogram that her self-worth isn't based on success, right? Which is also reprogramming cultural beliefs.
Totally. Absolutely. And especially if you're a New Yorker.
Yes.
Which is its own culture.
Yes, totally. That's right. And so with the nurturer, she then triggers insulin. Too much insulin has you store body fat everywhere. And over time, that can then interfere with estrogen levels. So then she'll start to store it on her upper thighs here. She can also store it on her arms here. So if you're the person that has these sort of extra fat here, that's because you give too much and you do not receive. And the only way I've seen to shift this on your upper arms is you balance out the receiving and the giving, because it's not all about the physical. And so with the nurturer, the way that she needs to eat to regulate the insulin levels and the estrogen levels is much more on a lower carbohydrate diet. I actually pull those carbohydrates out in the book for her. So she can have starch, she can have vegetables and fruit and things like that, but they're principally where she gets her source of carbohydrates from. And to focus a little bit more on cruciferous vegetables, which helps to detoxify estrogen, I replace nuts with seeds because the nuts are actually too energetically and chemically dense for her body. Mm. So she's better off with seeds like hemp seeds and hemp seeds, pumpkin seeds and sunflower seeds versus certain nuts. So I go into a lot of detail behind this and the whys. Mm. Then for the femme fatale is when your self-worth is based on your physical appearance, you can imagine there's this fixation with food and a very torturous relationship with food. You're either restricting or you're overeating, tons of shame wrapped up in that. And Marianne Williamson has an amazing quote, which is, if you think you are your skin, how can you ever be comfortable in your skin? Mm. I muddled that a little bit, but that's the gist of it. And so you have to move out of believing that you are only valuable because of your physical appearance. Mm-hmm. And so she has a baseline type of diet. It's very similar to the Wonder Woman's. There's a little bit more freedom in the way of eating compared to the nurturer because there's less of that hormonal influence. Although if she looks like the nurturer, then she may need to follow a little bit more of a restrictive diet compared to what's in there. which I do talk about in the book. And then there's the ethereal. And so the ethereal with her free-spirited ways, like this, she's not carrying too many burdens, right?
Yeah.
And floating so she's like light and airy. And so for her, she needs to learn to ground. And so the diet for her is more grounding. So for her, the soba noodle bowls and the grain bowls work really well for her because she needs that level of carbohydrate density to keep her grounded, but also to change the hormonal level. So tends to be low in estrogen. And if you're low in estrogen, what happens? Infertile, some amenorrhea, acne, dry skin. That's what goes on there. And so she works best with that.
So funny, as I'm listening to it, I'm always like, I'm every one of them. It's crazy.
Well, it's interesting because as a complete woman, you will take on the positive attributes of all of them. And that's what the goal is, to become a complete woman.
I love that.
And so you identify your archetype to disassociate from the wound, to really heal that wound. So you're no longer vulnerable. And when you're no longer riddled with anxiety because the word's going to be wrong, or riddled with anxiety because there's a bit of cellulite on your body, or you didn't pick up somebody from the airport and now they're mad at you, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever, all of those things. There's so much space for you now to put in the positive attributes of the other archetypes. So if, let's say, you're a Wonder Woman, because I've spoken about it the most on this section here, then you get to layer in the wonderful etherealness of the intuition.
Mm-hmm.
So the Wonder Woman is very intelligent. So the balance for her is that intuitive piece, start really tapping into that and allowing the femme fatale sensuality to come in and make her really fun and playful. And then there's the nurturer piece, which is like, what, come from here, right? Rather than here, it's like, come from this compassion and kindness place. And then you rise up to what I call the crown.
Mm.
And I originally called that the muse. We took it out of the book just because it's complicated for publishers sometimes to understand.
Yeah, they're like, what's this muse?
What's this other one? But it's like, you rise up to be the muse because you really are this complete woman. And you know in each circumstance what attributes to apply, because they're all cultivated. You're not just relying on this, on your dominant archetype to be there.
So that's
what the ultimate goal of the book is about.
I love the like theory of the wholeness. So here's a little tip that I think will be really helpful that people can really find in the archetype diet that can help them figure out how they became off balance. Obviously, the wound, it seems like a huge component, but a few notes on how each type might have lost their worth on their way with eating.
Specifically with eating?
Or just worth, because it seems like it's what funnels into everything.
Yeah, the identification of the archetype is through the self-worth. So at that point that you have unconsciously made this connection that you are worthy based on an external factor, whether it be success or looks or intuition or giving to others, that's when things have gone off balance. And because it's done in this sort of unconscious subconscious, then it's very difficult to be able to determine that. So that's why I built the archetype, so that once you identified with her, you knew what it was, right? It was there in front of you saying, well, this is what's going on. And now you get the opportunity to uncouple the programming that's been in place. So that's the root of it there. Now, they all have different eating behaviors. So we mentioned before that with the Wonder Woman, she is the reward eater. She's the one that is totally justifying everything that she's doing. So to try and take that glass of wine out, it's the like, you're taking my baby away.
I've worked so hard for this.
I've worked so hard for this. And really it's like, well, why did you feel like you needed to work so hard? That's what it comes down to.
That's the word.
Because that is, it's the behaviors that I started to recognize in my practice. And I was like, well, why is this happening? And so it was through that level that I went deeper and deeper and deeper to realize it was the self-worth piece. So I found it on the behavioral aspect because there was such resistance to it.
Oh, I love that.
So it's like, yes, it's her reward for making it through the day because she's just putting too much into work.
Totally.
And really, well, that's what she needs to change, is start to put time more into the other aspects of her life. And for the nurturer, she is the comfort eater. And I'll give you a classic example of the nurturer. And that knows that she should be having the smoothie for breakfast. You know, she's, you know, following you and maybe moon juice, and should be putting in her adaptogenic potions and all of that.
I'm like the bacon eater for breakfast. But yeah, I used to be the smoothie girl for sure.
So there's no freaking way that she thinks she has the time to be able to do that. Nor would she even allow herself that time. And this is what I will hear. My 3-year-old hates the blender. Can't turn it on. So don't have time to do that. I'm too busy. There's so much chaos in the house. And blah, 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 blah. So then she's out the door and then she's grabbing that gluten-free muffin, right? Because at least she's aware of that piece. And then she feels confident. And after that, she feels completely shitty about herself. Mm-hmm. And the day is totally blown. Right? It's totally gone. And then it's like a sandwich or whatever it is. That's the nurture, right? The out of balance nurture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the nurture is in balance, and she's figured that out, so she's not going towards those comforting foods. But that's in the unconscious.
And she's taken her licensing back to, like, give herself her morning things that she needs that might be quick, but she needs them.
Exactly. And that's the funny thing. By the time you go into the store to go and pick up the coffee and the muffin,
totally,
it's the same. It's probably more time than actually what it was to use the blender and actually
for yourself.
Yes, the child's probably fine. You can make them a smoothie, get them to love it. Like, there's
totally
so many other pieces.
You can have them help you make. Like, exactly. There's so many things, yeah.
And the femme fatale, well, just typically very... Well, let me talk about the femme fatale in balance, because I feel like sometimes I talk about her too much out of balance. So when she's balanced, she is so wonderfully exquisite to be around. Like, this is sparkly, captivating, magnetic. Like you want to be in this woman's presence. And a friend of mine, I'm happy to share her, but she's a JC, and she works with Taryn Toomey in the class, mm-hmm. and she's just like voluptuous, sensual woman. And,
wow.
And I'm like, I want to be in her presence.
Totally.
and I share that because sometimes the femme fatales think that that is totally beyond them, that they're never going to get there. And that actually isn't the case, but they need to believe that their self-worth is not based on their looks.
Mm.
Because when that's the case, it's the dysfunctional eating patterns exist. And you're on a diet, you're off a diet, like, oh, and it goes, it's never good enough for you.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get to your goal weight, then you can get skinnier, right?
Totally.
Right. So, for what purpose,
mm-hmm.
right? Why do you want to be at this weight in the first place? Go to the deeper root of that. You want to feel more confident. You want to feel more sensual. Like, get into that
the
and
core.
Start to activate those qualities.
I love that.
Which is really difficult to do if you haven't broken that piece that your self-worth is based on your looks.
Which is so hard, but it's society too, right?
I would say that for a lot of women, their overlay is often the femme fatale, because that's the imprint that we have had
for societal
decades. And then there's the ethereal. There's two ways of eating for the ethereal. Most ethereals forget to eat,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're so caught up in that
la da da da
da, right? They're just forgotten, and then there's blood sugar imbalances and so forth, and they get too skinny. Then the opposite also happens is when they are numbing. So they're numbing their sensitivity because they're highly sensitive to other people's emotions and to the environment. So they eat just like rubbishy carbs, mm-hmm. to ground them, because it will ground them. It actually does that. And then all of a sudden they start to gain more weight, and that's so out of balance with a light ethereal. Like, for them, gaining that weight it feels so foreign to them, because
mm-hmm.
it feels free spirited and light. Like, that's just, that weighs you down. And one of my friends and clients, she's a wonderful ethereal, and she worked at a Lua magazine for a while, which is naturally out of balance for an ethereal, because mm-hmm. it's so fixated on the physical body. And she ended up with vertigo because numbing herself with all of these starchy carbs, because she just didn't recognize what was going on.
Yeah.
And then finally something clicked, and the archetypes weren't in existence. So, not these archetypes anyway. To be able to realize that she's really an ethereal in an environment that is femme fatale and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm,
and
totally.
She moved into more of a spiritual practice.
Awesome.
So, which is just more aligned for her.
And did her life become more magnetic?
Yes.
Oh, I love it. It's always my favorite. She was owning it. I love that. And then you gave kind of how to ground. How does childhood play a role in your work with each of the types?
It's the root of it.
Mm.
So in childhood, that's where our imprints are created. And while there's a societal influence, We don't have to swallow that, and we don't always swallow it. It's definitely something that's happened in your childhood, typically to do with family, but it may be with friends or other practitioners or so forth, because that experience changes your view. And it is the core of the archetypes. And once you can identify the memories that created this sense of self-worth, so it can be in the negative, like you can say, I didn't feel pretty enough and therefore I became the femme fatale or I became the Wonder Woman. And then there's often positive reinforcement with that, so it just confirms what you're saying. So with a femme fatale, it'll be you become prettier and therefore you get more attention.
Or and it takes you further and further.
Takes you further into that there. And you know, being a model and an actress. Like I work with a number of the models, and the skinnier they get, guess what? The more money that they got paid. Although that's a little flaw in itself, because these days we know that that actually isn't fully true. It has to do with your influence.
It's like influence.
So we sort of swapped a little bit from the femme fatale into a little bit more of that Wonder Woman.
So
I don't fully know how that's showing up with the models, but I'd be very, very curious to understand that a little bit more.
Interesting. And that's very helpful. Can you tell us a couple of expanding stories regarding clients that really shifted once aligning to their types?
Great question.
To their archetype.
I had a woman come and see me, and she'd done no work on any type of spiritual work. So she was just like a little newbie to this work, which made me so excited.
Oh, it's the best. It's a blank canvas. There's nothing you have to program.
And because of that, it was really fast. Yeah. So within 6 weeks or 8 weeks that she was able to get there. So in her mid-40s was working for I won't say the company to give away her details, working for a very successful company, had been there for like 15 years or so, was earning about $120,000, $150,000. This is New York too. So that's like baseline to be able to survive in New York. And I'm serious. There's no joke around that. And she had not met a man. She had frozen her eggs back in her late 30s and wanted it all. And had come to me through the archetype work. Not to do with any health issue, which is how most people come to me. And so we worked on all of that. And within the 6 to 8 weeks, I actually think it was closer to 6 weeks, she had got a brand new job, which paid her an extra $235,000.
Well, just extra. Yeah.
And then she just let me know that she now got promoted after 9 months of being there. So we moved up again. On the break between the two jobs, she took a very last-minute trip to climbing in Nepal.
Wow.
And she met the man of her dreams.
I can see, like, the manifestation, how it aligns, too, of, like, really stepping into her authentic self.
Yeah, so met the man of her dreams, and so they are now in this wonderful, luscious relationship, and they're thinking of having a child. Wow. And so it's all just completely played out.
And what was her type and her will?
She was like a nurturer Wonder Woman. And I can't remember the specifics on it there, but it was very quick to close it out.
Amazing.
So, and very, very, I was like, wow, she is a very good manifester, because it was, I had her do a lot of the, because I hadn't done this work before, which was, what is it that you want it to look like? So what does that relationship look like?
Get specific, yeah.
Very specific. And she really did that.
Awesome.
And then there was a tiny bit on breaking some of the childhood patterns there and the expectations. So she grew up in Texas, and so there was those expectations, the beauty, and more so that it was the woman was at home. Was at home with the children and that type of family. So, and she got it, and she still got it, and it's still growing and progressing. Because this is a really important piece, that sometimes you can manifest things, but they're expanders.
Totally.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the dream.
Yep, it's not the dream so much.
Yeah.
And your toughest case that you saw once they integrated their type, that bam, they are really living their life now? And their body and their body image.
The toughest case?
Yeah.
Or the person that really resisted
it? Sure. Yeah. Anyone that's like, I want people to really expand, because that's what helps me shift.
The resistance comes with my binge eaters, because there's this gross fear that and a valid fear that they will not be able to break it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them, the one I'm going to talk about, she femme fatale,
mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman overlay,
mm.
And her father left her mother. The mother was 200 pounds, and father left her mother for a ballerina.
Oh, stop it! The worst. Oh.
So there was always that piece to be beautiful and skinny, and therefore that meant that you were desirable. But there's the subconscious piece that not wanting to upset her mother there. So that was the binge eating piece.
Mm-hmm.
And with her in particular, we worked on that, but we also worked on just getting her body back into a state where she wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And once she gave up that resistance, and she was, the weight just came off.
Wow.
The weight came off pretty fast, mm-hmm. and I can't remember, but it was, sometimes I just don't remember the time. So, yeah. You know, it's less than a month anyway. Yeah. And so that was harder one, because it was all this resistance to it until there was finally this decision to actually surrender.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. And one more of your most powerful, that takes me three to expand. I remember. So you talked about this and supported. So anybody listening, it may be redundant, but I want you to share this one, because it was the one when we had a session together, you really pinpointed safety for me.
Yes.
You know, you had never, all I'm hearing is you were never safe, even though I wasn't beat or sexually yes. abused, but I was constantly from house to house to house having to protect and like run the show. And yes. I just never could relax and really be in safety and just be.
Yeah. It was interesting with you, because for you, you felt it was really physical.
Mm-hmm.
And as I listened to your story, I was like, there may be a little piece that's physical, but I felt that that's what it was. And it was like, oh, I want you to reprogram those experiences, like with the safety.
Totally.
And it's a really good point to bring up, because we believe that we can program fear, because mm-hmm. that's what we do, but we don't talk about how you can program safety.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric Kandel, who's a Nobel Prize laureate and is like 85 years old, and he's a neuroscientist out at Columbia University, mm-hmm. Jewish, and I've got this total geeky
crush on
him.
Yeah, you sent me his.
And he identified where in the brain we store memory.
Mm-hmm.
And what he also did with some of his studies is he found safety. So he had a rodent study, and he made them, all the rodents, scared, and then put them, and then made some of them safe,
mm.
like had programmed safety into them. I can't remember the actual specifics of what he actually did. And then he had them go into a swimming pool, like a little swimming pool, and he watched them. So those that were programmed in fear just like drowned and panicked, and mm-hmm. you know, maybe they didn't drown, but they were sort of felt like they were drowning,
panic attacks,
very, very helpless. And those that had been programmed with the safety were able to swim to safety and then
calmly
get out of that. Yeah. So he was able to show that just as you can program fear, you can unprogram it and program it with safety to change the behaviors.
No, right? Yeah.
And so if you change those behaviors, guess what? You change the physical body.
Because your cortisol changes. I mean, everything
completely
changes hormonally.
Yes, cortisol changes, and the adrenaline and noradrenaline changes, and then, you know, that is going to shift the hormones, and it's going to shift in a positive sense the gut microbiome. So all the physical body shifts, and this is the basis of cognitive behavioral therapy mm-hmm. as well. So CBT is your thoughts leading to changes in your emotions, your physical body, and your behaviors, right? That's the basis of it. And they go to a good CBT therapist, if they're trained appropriately, then go to childhood. Because it's like, well, where's the imprint that created this thought for
totally.
You? Because it's just a perception.
Yeah.
So that's sort of part of my, which we know that's part of my programming. So
yeah.
It's not I'm not surprised that I ended up with the archetypes through
totally
this, you know, this model here, because it's integrated.
Which are so successful. Okay, so this is my last question. For the person who's just buying the book now, can you tell them how to navigate the book correctly? Because there's a quiz to find out,
mm-hmm.
and then you have protocols. But just like if you're not able to work with them one-on-one, how would you suggest that they navigate
yes.
the book?
First of all, it's read the book and actually do the exercises, because there's only so much evolution that the knowledge will give you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot in the book.
Most of us don't intellectualize, physically.
Yeah,
do.
Yes, that's right. And most of us don't take the time to read a book. Like, we'll get pieces of it and then we put it down. This truly is a program. Like, it's a solution. So it's find your archetype, read about your archetype so that it can sort of more resonate with you, and you can understand yourself more. You can understand how you operate with other people. You understand your wounds. And then it goes into the dietary piece of this is how you want to be eating for your mindset and your physical body. And I really lay it out as here's the formula. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the things that you need to be a step by step by step. And then there's a dietary plan for you. Now, the reason I give the formula is not everybody wants that diet plan. If you mm-hmm. just have the diet plan and you don't understand the concept behind it, then you'll go on and off it. And that's not what I'm looking for. Like, this is a way of eating for life. Mm-hmm. And then I also talk about, you know, once you get balanced, because it's written for when you're out, it's written to lose weight.
Totally. Right?
But you can certainly get a whole lot of benefits from it, even if you don't need to lose the weight. But the diet is set up that way. And so I then explain that once you move out of that and move into maintenance, how you can be a little bit more free, a lot freer actually mm-hmm. with the diet. So and then there's the mind piece. So while the mind piece is at the back, it is the most important aspect, because if you don't reprogram that imprint, then you are going to continually have those same behaviors.
Totally.
And that is what we see all the time. So somebody will go on the clean program or Whole30, and, you know, maybe they'll experience some wonderful results from it. Maybe they won't.
It depends
how they've interpreted it, mm-hmm. actually. And then they fall off it. And then they're back to this same, I'm going to go and have my glass of wine every night, or I'm grabbing the muffin on the way to work or whatever. So that has to change where you get your self-worth from to be able to change those behaviors. There's no, I'm in this mode of that's how I see it, I can't think of any other way that you could properly change those behaviors without really getting to that core of it.
I love that. And it's the first like nutritional book I've ever heard of that touches on all of it and like actually implements how to use all of it. Because again, we always need to get back to mind, body, spirit.
That's
and you
right.
hit all of them. It's all of
yeah.
them.
So the diet piece in the title is sort of an ironic twist on it.
Totally.
That's my humor.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. And when, for someone like me who only has the time for Audibles, I know you said you're recording yours. When does your audio version come out as well?
Ah, well, it's recorded. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping it'll come out around the same time, which is
fantastic.
The 5th of June.
Yay!
Now, maybe there'll be a delay on it or something, but yeah, it's in there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Donna.
You,
we're so grateful. And where, even though it'll be linked, where can we find you on all of the different places with your website and your social?
So social is my name, but it's like Dana, D-A-N-A, James. That's my Instagram name. And then my author website is danajames.com. And I would encourage everybody to go to the author website and do the female archetype test and see what you come at us.
Yay! Well, I'm so grateful. And you'll have to be back for more.
Thanks,
there's
Lacey.
So much more we can cover. All right.
Thank you so much for joining today. And if today's episode piqued your curiosity about manifestation, head over to freeandnative.com and click on Start Here, where you'll find a video of me giving you all of my recommendations of how to navigate manifestation from here on out. And again, if you liked it, please comment below, review, and share with a fellow manifester. And if you're looking for the like-minded community that you might be manifesting, head over to our Facebook group called The Secret Society. You can find that on our homepage. And make sure to sign up for our newsletter, where we send out new manifestation content and how to digest it and put it into practice twice a month. Have a beautiful day.